This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Heidi Adams-Fitzpatrick in Washington, coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Five soldiers and five policemen have been killed within 24 hours in Cameroon's two English-speaking regions.
That's Moki Edwin Kinzeka on a deadly 24 hours in Cameroon. We'll have full details on the story straight ahead. Also, Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari promising to bring back his country's citizens stranded in Libya and other parts of the world. But how does he plan to do this? And British lawmakers up in arms after President Donald Trump retweeted an anti-Muslim video posted by a British far-right leader. We'll have these stories for you and more, so stay with us. There's lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. In our top story, it's been a deadly 24 hours in Cameroon, with five soldiers and five police officers killed in the country's English-speaking regions. Separatists are claiming responsibility. Moki Edwin Kinzeka is in Yaoundé for us with this report.
Cameroon's communications minister, Issa Chiroma, says armed men attacked a military convoy deployed from Yaoundé on a peacekeeping mission to the English-speaking southwest town of Mamfé on the morning of November 29 and killed four soldiers. One soldier who was severely wounded escaped and the attackers stole huge quantities of weapons. The second attack took place in a Umojok, not far from Mamfé, early Thursday morning, leaving five policemen and a soldier dead. Chiruma confirmed that an armed group fighting for the independence of the English-speaking regions from the rest of Cameroon claimed responsibility.
The asylum claim to belong to the armed wing of the secessionist movement called Southern Cameroon Ambazonian Consortium United Front. How can we maintain dialogue with an interlocutor whose only ideology is the partition of a state that is legitimate and recognized as such by all international bodies?
Chiruma says Cameroon President Paul Biya has deployed more troops to the area to maintain peace and track the assailants. He says the government is asking people to share any information that could lead to the assailants' arrest. Schools have been closed in the English-speaking northwest and southwest since November last year, when lawyers and teachers called for a strike to stop what they believe is the overbearing use of French in the regions. Violence erupted when separatists joined in and started asking for complete independence. On October 1, they declared what they called the independence of the Republic of Ambazonia and asked the military to surrender and join them or leave their territory. They have so far killed 16 soldiers and policemen in the two English-speaking regions. President Biya has said he is not open to negotiation on the form of the state and that Cameroon is one and indivisible. Separatist groups have said on social media that they will talk with Biya only about the terms of their separation. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari says he'll bring his country's citizens who are stranded in Libya and other parts of the world back home. And he'll do this by expanding the country's socio-economic programs. Buhari is among a group of African and European leaders in Cote d'Ivoire holding high-level talks on migration. It's become a key topic after a video surfaced purportedly showing West African migrants being sold at a slave auction in Libya. The leaders announced they'll set up a special task force to help protect migrants, especially those detained in Libya. Burkina Faso's foreign minister has already recalled his country's ambassador to Libya, saying it's, quote, unacceptable to have slaves in the 21st century. The European Union has pledged a Marshall Plan for Africa at the summit. VOA's Kim Lewis spoke with reporter Josephine McKenna about the outrage over human slave auctions.
Well, this has been a pledge from the European Union for a Marshall Plan for Africa, a €44 billion pledge at a summit that was actually dominated by outrage over the slave auctions that we've heard about in Libya of migrants who have been sold at auction there. So we've seen some strong comments and already a strong statement from French President Emmanuel Macron, who's announced that the European Union and the African Union together will launch concrete military and policing action to rescue African migrants enslaved in Libya and to take a stronger stand and try and arrest some of the human traffickers inside Libya. That's a tall order, but it's certainly a very important pledge that's coming from the EU and support for Africa over this migrant crisis that we've seen.
Also, I understand that European Commission President Jean-Claude Juncker also made a remark regarding African migrants.
The European Commission President Jean-Claude Juncker said it was important for the European Union to create an external investment plan for Africa. We've heard about this before. This is concrete evidence, though, that the EU wants to invest in the home countries, try and create opportunities and investment. And this investment plan will take them up to about the year 2020. And it's also focusing on growth sectors like renewable energy. Now, we've heard about these commitments in the past. This is a really important indication that the EU is really getting behind this and taking concrete action to try and slow down the flow of migrants that we've seen crossing sub-Saharan Africa through Libya and across the Mediterranean.
Also, there are reports that Nigerian migrants are being sent back home. What information do you have on that?
Well, there have been 242 Nigerian migrants sent back to their home country this week. That's the latest we've seen from the International Organization for Migration that has been running successive repatriation of migrants, moving them out of Libya as they try and escape terrible conditions there of torture and violence and rape. And really an indication too that they're giving up these dreams of coming to Europe to try and build a new life. Now, the Nigerian authorities say that they have been working with the IOM on the return of migrants. We've seen around 5,000 Nigerian migrants return to Libya in recent months, and these numbers are continuing. The IOM is moving around 500 migrants a week from different African countries. So it's really a dramatic change. And now with the involvement of the EU and the statement from President Macron this week, it seems that the EU wants to do more to also support these kinds of evacuations. President Macron said that the leaders of Libya, France, Germany, Chad, Niger, and other countries, as well as the UN, had decided on an approach to really confront this emergency situation and evacuate people from Libya who no longer want to be there.
That was reporter Josephine McKenna in Rome, speaking there to VOA's Kim Lewis. Moving to Southern Africa now, and 18 years ago, Zimbabwe abandoned its currency amid extreme hyperinflation. Since then, the country has relied on foreign currency, most notably the US dollar and the South African rand. But for more than a year now, even that money has been scarce, making it hard for Zimbabweans to buy even the most basic necessities. Anita Powell is in Harare with this report.
Like many Zimbabweans, Issa Makwindi is frustrated over the liquidity crisis that has made it nearly impossible for ordinary people to get cash in the Southern African nation. The recent resignation of President Robert Mugabe has ushered in hope in Zimbabwe, especially among people like Makwindi, a 19-year-old divinity student at the University of Zimbabwe. What it hasn't brought, yet, is cash. In his inaugural address, President Emmerson Mnangagwa promised that Zimbabweans would soon be able to access their earnings. Those are words that soothe Makwindi, who wheels around campus in a rickety wheelchair after a car crash led to the amputation of his legs last year. His savings, all $1,650 of it, sit in a bank account. But the vendor he wired that money to can't get the cash out to buy him what he needs.
Okay, I've ordered for my prosthetic legs in April. I've paid the amount, but the supplier is saying I cannot send you those prosthesis because I cannot transact money from here to South Africa. So I've been waiting ever since until now.
VOA spoke to dozens of Zimbabweans on the streets of the capital, Harare, in the days after Mugabe's resignation, Mnangagwa's inauguration. Zimbabweans said their biggest, most urgent concern was getting cash. Professor Albert Makochekwana chairs the economics department at the University of Zimbabwe. He says that so far he thinks the president has taken positive steps to address the cash crisis, including announcing a 3-month amnesty for top officials to return stolen government money and working to make it easier to import goods. The professor also said it was hard to determine when the crisis will be resolved.
It's very difficult to predict, but in the long run, I know if all goes well, by next year, this time, I think we will be close to a normal African functioning economy. But for this specific, it's very difficult to say whether by January or by what, that one, it's very difficult.
That may be little comfort for Choice Zhuwao, who stood outside a bank in central Harare for the second day in a row seeking to draw $50, the daily maximum banks will allow. If he doesn't get it, he said, his three children will be suspended from school for a month. Jonathan, a security guard who refused to give his last name, said he had come 2 days in a row seeking cash. And what if he fails again? Jonathan said he would take more unpaid time off work.
I'll talk to the superiors. Yeah, and they ask for the time to go and to come to the bank.
Cash is available on the black market, but at high rates. And Zimbabweans say their only legitimate money source is more expensive. Businesses often charge higher rates for customers paying with credit cards or with the popular EcoCash mobile money application. Clothing vendor Tracy Majoni says the fees attached to those money services are making her business operate at a loss.
If I want to get $100 cash out of my EcoCash account, I'm charged about $3.
Makochekwana says that may take some time to change, but the confidence in the economy, both from investors and citizens, will eventually even things out.
What a fueled that is this issue whereby people have been keeping money in their homes because of their fear and or limited confidence with the banking system. So I'm sure if there's improvement in terms of confidence in the banking system, and if also money start coming in and we have this issue of shortage of cash going away, I'm sure the prices and the money will converge to the same unit, whether it's EcoCash, it's Swipe, or it's the actual currency.
That day, Zimbabweans agree, can't come soon enough. Anita Powell, VOA News, Harare.
Well, observers say President Mnangagwa has a lot on his plate, an agenda that includes preparing for next year's elections and fixing an economy in distress. VOA's Ray Choto spoke with Harare-based analyst Tendai Mbofana about the challenges facing Zimbabwe's new president.
First of all, I think Mr. Mnangagwa is in a bit of a fix. I think he's in big trouble because he has to satisfy a lot of people who are making a lot of demands. A lot of people expect so much from him. First of all, I would say the Lacoste team itself, which I can say at the moment they've won this infight factional that was in ZANU-PF. So he has to please those people who enabled him within ZANU-PF to lead the party and the country. At the same time, I'm sure the military, there will be some military people there also who might be eyeing some government posts, who are now no longer just being content as being military people, who might actually be putting pressure on him to also give them posts within the new government. And as we have heard from some quarters within the opposition, they are also pushing for him, not necessarily for a transitional government, for I think ZANU-PF has already made it clear that it's not constitutional at the moment to have a transitional government as they are pinning their hopes on an election next year in 2018. But they would be pressuring Mr. Mnangagwa to at least appoint a few of them into his cabinet.
We know historically that Mr. Mnangagwa does not really have the support of the people. He has lost elections before, like in 2000, yes, he lost to Blessing Chobundo. What changed this time for them to be in support of Mr. Mnangagwa?
Quite honestly, Mr. Chocho, that is a question that also baffles me. I really do not understand where the hope that people have placed on Mr. Mnangagwa comes from. He is a ZANU-PF person. As you have rightly said, he lost support in Kwekwe, then he moved to Chirimanzo, somewhere there. He has no support on the ground. I believe the only excitement that was there was the removal of Mugabe. And if people are just going to pin their hopes on the removal of one person and then say, oh, you are our hero, things are going to be changing now, things are going to be fine for us, we're going to get jobs, we're going to get cash, we're going to get investment in the country, I believe that is a wrong replaced hope in one man who has not support before, who is part of that Gabao, that ZANU-PF group that has destroyed the country since 1980.
Some analysts are saying that there are broader issues at play. You, as a political analyst, do you have an idea of these broader issues at play?
I'm not quite sure of what broader issues are at play. Probably foreign issues that are at play, that probably, I've heard some quarters saying that probably Mr. Mnangagwa had already been given a go-ahead by foreign forces from the West and from the East. Maybe that's when he brought up this issue during his inauguration of compensating those white farmers with their farms taken. So there could be a possibility that there is a foreign influence in there, that there had been secret talks, people within ZANU-PF, including Mnangagwa himself. From
where is Mr. Mnangagwa going to get the money to compensate these farmers?
There is no way he's going to get that money. Already the economy is suffering. They're already failing to pay the teachers that are already on their payroll. A huge percentage, a huge chunk of the government revenue is going towards salaries for civil servants. Where would that money come from? That brings up a lot of other questions. If he made those promises to white people, where is it going to come from? What are the timelines?
British lawmakers are up in arms after US President Donald Trump retweeted an anti-Muslim video posted by a far-right British leader. The UK Prime Minister Theresa May criticized President Trump, saying it was wrong for him to have done this. Several British lawmakers called on May to cancel a state visit by President Trump, scheduled for next year. London Mayor Sadiq Khan also weighed in, saying it is increasingly clear that Trump should not be welcomed and that many in Britain will see his Twitter activity as a betrayal of US-British relationships. Trump provoked a wave of anger and disgust from politicians in Britain and human rights groups in the United States when he shared the post by Jada Franson, deputy leader of the group Britain First. Franson, who was convicted this month of abusing a Muslim woman and whose group wants to ban Islam, is facing further criminal charges of racially aggravated harassment. And at 22 past the hour, you're listening to Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. No Safe Place is the title of a new report that details the scale of violence against women and girls in South Sudan. And the study confirms what many have suspected for some time about the consequences of gender-based violence in the ongoing conflict. VOA's Ayen Bior reports.
Up to 65% of South Sudanese women interviewed for the report say they had experienced sexual or physical violence in their lifetime. Co-author Mary Ellsberg, director of George Washington University's Global Women's Institute, says that is double the global average and is among the highest levels of violence around the world.
We found also that the greatest amount of violence actually occurred in the home, not outside the home. And it was mostly some male family members, but mostly women's husbands or intimate partners. Intimate partner violence was as high as 73% in Roombeck and over 50% in all of the places we looked at.
The UK aid-funded study was released in partnership between the International Rescue Committee and the George Washington University's Global Women's Institute. Researchers spoke to 2,300 women through household surveys in Roombeck, Juba, and a protection of civilians site outside Juba. They spoke to an additional 500 people in qualitative interviews and an additional 500 men about their experience. Activist Valentino Achak Deng, the founder of the Valentino Achak Deng Foundation, believes men should lead the conversation on sexual violence against women and girls.
We must realize that this is something that has happened and is happening, and we must begin by accepting it and take up responsibilities. In that case, we could also rally the woman, because women also need to speak up, and they need to be open and confident about protecting their rights and their place in the society.
Achak adds that a national conversation about the widespread problem of sexual violence begins in the home, where parents can make sure their daughters are treated with the same level of equality as their brothers.
Our girls still continue to be the one to fetch water, to be the one to wash utensil, wash clothes, provide a lot of things in the house. From right there, you can see an inequality in how girls are assigned duties opposed to their male counterpart.
Jahan Deng is a board member of the South Sudanese Women's Empowerment Network. She blames the high levels of violence on decades of conflict dating back to the civil war in Sudan. Deng says for too long, generations of South Sudanese have lived in the shadows of war, which has torn apart communities and destroyed coping mechanisms.
So if we look into trying to treat the trauma and get some hopes for the people, some confidence, dismiss the POCs, help people to get back into their communities where they are well respected, where everybody has their own space to do what they can do to live in peace and in harmony.
Ellsberg is hopeful that the report can bring more attention to issues affecting women and girls.
And to open a dialogue about some issues such as child enforced marriage and bride price that are traditional practices in South Sudan that are not questioned very often, but that, according to our research, are highly connected to sexual assault and abductions and violence against women and girls, and that we would also need to address.
While women are the ones overwhelmingly affected by sexual violence, the report also found that 9% of men in Juba and 6% of men in Rumbek reported having experienced some type of sexual violence. Ayan Bior for VOA News, Washington.
Two major American broadcasters are out of their jobs tonight over allegations of sexual misconduct. NBC's Today Show host Matt Lauer was terminated on Tuesday after the network received a complaint from a colleague about Lauer's inappropriate sexual behavior in the workplace. Today, Lauer apologized for his actions and vowed to, quote, fix the damage he has caused. Minnesota Public Radio fired longtime personality Garrison Keillor for what it called improper behavior. Keillor is known worldwide as the former host of the show A Prairie Home Companion, and until Wednesday did a daily series of poetry and literature called The Writer's Almanac. But Keillor told a Minneapolis newspaper that he apologized to a female co-worker after touching her on her bare back. Veteran television host Charlie Rose was fired last week after accusations of sexual harassment from at least 8 women, charges that included groping and lewd phone calls. The broadcasters are the latest in a string of high-profile men to be confronted with charges of inappropriate behavior. Others include members of Congress, actors, a former movie executive, former presidents, and current U.S. President Donald Trump. About 16 women have accused President Trump of sexual harassment and worse. He calls the accusations fake news. And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Heidi Adams-Fitzpatrick in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent, 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please do stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sport coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Curtis Bynum, thank you for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, sports fans. This is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports.
I love Sunny Side of Sports.
Please join us for a whole half hour of sports talk and news Monday through Friday at 1630 and 1830 UTC GMT. On the internet, you can like me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter, and read my blog. Visit voaafrica.com and enjoy the show.